Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. For most of us, the pandemic is a memory. For the Haliburton-Kawartha Pine Ridge District Health Unit, the pandemic continues to influence services and programs in 2023. In this interview with Dr. Natalie Bocking, the Chief Medical Officer of Health, she will explain what has happened in the past year. It is all included in the Health Unit's annual report. She will shine a light on the Health Unit's activities to address various activities. Most importantly, she will highlight the relaunching of services and programs that were put on hold during COVID-19. The school vaccination program is one of the most high-profile of these. You judge if the health unit was successful in 2023. I am so pleased to have with me today Dr. Natalie Bocking, the Chief Medical Officer for the Haliburton-Kawartha Pine Ridge District Health Unit. Welcome back to Consider This Northumberland.
Hello, thanks very much for having me.
For most people listening to this, their eyes glaze over when you mention an organization's annual report. Besides this being a requirement of the health unit, can you explain why this level of accountability is so important to the community?
Would love to. I have a couple of thoughts related to this. So number one, I know that accountability is important to all of us, especially in an era where there is not enough funding, not enough money to go to meet all of the needs. Our annual report reports on our overall financial outlook, as well as what the community is getting for the funding it receives, or that we receive through the health unit. I think the other important thing is that despite COVID-19 thrusting public health into the spotlight, there is so much work that goes on at the health unit behind the scenes that most people aren't aware of and we don't talk about. And so this is an opportunity to help people understand the true breadth of the work that happens at the health unit.
There are a number of things we should discuss, but it was interesting that the report references the impact of the pandemic. Now, for most people, the pandemic is history. Why was the impact of the pandemic on the health unit still such a part of what you were dealing with in 2023?
A number of reasons that I'll highlight. So number one, I think we talk a lot about the overall impact of the pandemic on the community's mental health and the recovery time that it has taken. And we use terms like burnout. We throw them around a lot. The reality is that health unit staff put their all into the pandemic response. As things started to slow down, they didn't stop to recover. We realized that there was also, not only was there a backlog in programs and services that had stopped during the pandemic that we were trying to catch up on, but the reality is that COVID didn't actually go away. So there was still ongoing work associated with COVID-19, even if it wasn't at a pandemic level, still outbreaks to manage, still vaccine to distribute and administer, and still data and surveillance reports. So the work continues and is now really embedded in our day-to-day activities related to infectious disease control.
Just on a side issue, the province has said that it's no longer going to be doing water monitoring. How is that going to impact this very thing that we just talked about, the fact that you still have these commitments to carry out?
So this is a good opportunity for me to provide some information related to that. So during the pandemic, we started our respiratory infections dashboard, which is on our website. So that was a place that people can go to find out what's happening with COVID-19, and then we expanded it to include influenza as well. So that during respiratory season, people could find out, well, are we seeing a lot of COVID-19 locally? Some of the data pieces that would tell us, are we seeing a lot of COVID-19, are what are its levels in wastewater? How many cases are being reported to the health unit? What's the test positivity that we're seeing in terms of the number of tests that are happening and the number of tests that are then positive? Over the last year, as we don't see as much COVID, the province has changed a number of things and changed what data will be available to health units to have on our websites. We recently heard the announcement that the wastewater surveillance is stopping, so that will no longer be a data source that we have available. Also, the types of information being reported about COVID-19 cases is also changing. So we won't have the same level of information available on our dashboard moving forward, really to inform us about what's happening at community level with COVID-19.
Let's go back to the report now. The level of activity for the health unit is something people might not think about. For example, you distributed more than 3,000 naloxone kits. That number seems huge. Could you put it into context for us and explain its significance within your mandate?
Certainly. So health units have the responsibility through the Ministry of Health for the distribution of naloxone kits. Now, while we distribute some individually, they're available at our health unit offices, our primary route of delivery is through partner organizations. So partner organizations that do outreach in the community, that offer community-based clinics, et cetera, access their naloxone kits through the health unit. So this might be community outreach workers that are using naloxone or have naloxone for themselves to use as needed, but also distributing to all of their clients. So it's supporting a network of community-based organizations to reach those really at highest risk and in need of naloxone kits. That number reflects our entire jurisdiction, so Northumberland County, City of Kawartha Lakes, and Haliburton County. And it also, I think, reflects the increasing awareness of communities, families, individuals that might be using substances of the importance of having naloxone available.
Is that a high number, though? I mean, compared to, say, previous years, or do you have a sense of the demand for these kits growing, or is it about the same?
Well, it is an increase. It's not a dramatic increase. I think it's consistent with what we're seeing in terms of the emphasis we're placing on the importance of naloxone. I just want to flag the other message that we put out this past year is the importance of carrying more than one naloxone kit at a time, because the potency of the drug supply is such that you need more than one dose of naloxone often.
Another number that was intriguing was the reports of communicable diseases and infectious diseases. There were 1,610 cases you reviewed. Tell us about that and why it is important.
So in Ontario, we have a list of infectious diseases that it is a requirement for both the laboratory and or a healthcare professional that if they get a positive report or if they believe that that's the infection that they're seeing, they have to report it to public health. Now, when public health gets that report, we do an assessment, and it's standardized in terms of what our response might be. The whole goal being, how can we prevent this from spreading to other people? How can we prevent an outbreak? How can we ensure that healthcare providers are aware if there's an illness circulating? I think most people don't realize the full range of types of infections. So these could be bacteria or viruses. We often divide it into different categories. So respiratory illnesses, things like measles are reportable. There's certain enteric infections, so things like Giardia, Campylobacter, E. coli are all reportable. Sexually transmitted infections, things like chlamydia, gonorrhea, syphilis are all reportable. other invasive bacterial infections like Brucei streptococcus. We've had seen recent media reports, meningococcal disease, and then tick-borne diseases like Lyme disease, like babesiosis, anaplasmosis. So it's quite a long list of viruses and bacteria that we have the responsibility to follow up on an individual and community level for.
If I'm not mistaken, you recently sent out a press release talking about whooping cough in our area. Is this another example of what we're talking about?
It's a perfect example. So pertussis or whooping cough, if a family doctor thinks that their patient has whooping cough, they are obligated to inform the health unit. If they test for whooping cough and the lab determines that it's positive, that lab report automatically gets sent to the health unit, and we follow up with the client, with the family, to ensure they've been treated, and also to find out where they've been so that we can ensure that people are aware of any precautions that they might need to take.
Again, the report wasn't clear. Is 1,610 cases a large number, and how does that compare to other years?
So difficult to compare over the pandemic years because we were seeing certainly many more numbers of COVID-19 cases when we were at a time that every single COVID-19 case was reportable. So before we had the testing at home, you could only get into the lab. Every positive result was sent to the health unit. We know that there are fluctuations, so certain infections will increase over time and then decrease, and then increase and decrease depending on what's happening in the community. We have talked about certain infections increasing lately, and in particular ones that are vaccine preventable. So things like pertussis. In Ontario, we have seen measles cases because during the pandemic globally, there were many children that weren't getting their routine vaccinations. And so we do expect right now to see an increase in those types of infections.
Well, that leads nicely into my next question, which in the report, something that the health unit did in the past year was reinstate the immunization school kids and ensuring children in local schools are vaccinated. Considering the recent measles outbreak and this most recent press release that you've sent out, this seems especially important. Tell us about the process of getting this program up and going again.
This was a resource-intensive effort, not just by the health unit, I want to say, but also through schools and school boards. So the Immunization of School Pupils Act is provincial legislation, and it requires parents or guardians to either A, submit records of vaccinations for their kids to the health unit, or B, provide a valid exemption. So that exemption could be a medical exemption, so from a healthcare provider, or it could be for a conscientious or religious exemption in which they have to complete a specific form and submit that to the health unit. So it doesn't require every child to receive vaccinations, but it requires the health unit, the parents, to report the record or an exemption, and it requires the health unit to maintain those records. And that enables the health unit, when there is a case of measles at a school, we will know which kids have received the vaccine, which kids have not, which schools or grades might in particular be more vulnerable to an outbreak. Measles in particular, for example, is a very, very infectious illness. We talk about needing at least 95% of the population to be immune to measles, either through vaccine or through previous infection, in order to prevent an outbreak. So if we know that we have some schools where only 60% of kids have received their measles vaccine, that's a huge flag and concern for us. We did a big push this year for every single grade, every child, and every vaccine to get our records up to date so that if we were seeing an increase in measles, we would know what we were working with and we would be able to respond quickly and effectively.
What did you find once you got all of this underway? Were people participating? Did you get the records that you needed? How did it go once you started reintroducing this?
So it took some time for everybody to, I think, remember this process. So this is a process that has been in place since the 1990s, but had not been enforced for several years during the pandemic. So not only were health unit staff not relearning, but redoing procedures that we had before the pandemic. School principals were also relearning this process, so they hadn't seen it for several years. And parents were being reminded that this is not a new thing. This has been around since the 1990s. Your child that's in grade five, you actually submitted their vaccinations, but were missing a booster dose or something like that. Once we had the right information out and we were getting everyone on the same page, we started to receive all of the information. It always is a bit of a process, as we know that there are many different reasons why a parent or guardian might struggle to get a vaccine record in on time, and we do our best to work with them.
What are the rates, the percentages that of children that are vaccinated within the systems? What are you finding?
So I don't have up-to-date numbers from this year because we've only just finished. This is our very last week of enforcement related to it for this year. So we will have those numbers available later in the summer, and happy to share them out then.
Do you get much pushback from parents regarding immunization?
So we always know there's a variety of reasons why people might be concerned about submitting records. There has always been a very small number of parents that disagree with the provincial legislation and don't want to complete the proper exemption form. In the legislation, it's very clearly spelled out what happens if the proper records are not received by the health unit. So if they're not received and there's not an exemption, then the principal is required to suspend the student from attending school. Unfortunately, there are always a small number of students that end up being suspended. For some parents, this is just a case of very last minute, last thing on the priority list, first day of suspension, the records come in, and then a very small number that are still concerned about that provincial legislation, and it's a lot of work and many ongoing conversations.
In the report, it mentions a unique partnership between yourselves and the Middlesex London Health Unit for a program called Nurse Family Partnership. What did that program do?
So this is a collaboration between our health unit as well as Peterborough Public Health, together with Middlesex London Health Unit and a couple of other health units. So the Nurse Family Partnership Program is an evidence-based early childhood development program. So it is specifically for mothers or for families that are young and it's their first time pregnancy. And in particular, they might be facing certain other barriers or disadvantages, whether it be economics or poverty related, substance use, mental health related, whatever those other challenges or barriers in accessing care might be. It's an intensive program where a nurse is partnered with that family and works with that family from throughout the entire pregnancy and then up to 2 years afterwards to provide supports. When I reference that it's evidence-based, this program's been implemented throughout the United States, a number of different provinces in Canada, and has been shown to contribute to not only better maternal health outcomes, but also childhood health outcomes, including language development and mental health. Because the HKPR District Health Unit is relatively small, to be a full implementer of this program, you need a certain volume of parents or mothers that meet that criteria. And us on our own don't fit and wouldn't have the sufficient number. But together with Peterborough Public Health, we actually did have a sufficient number, and hence why we have a specific partnership with them to implement the program. And then Middlesex London Health Unit is really the coordinator for the province.
You got a new website, and getting your story out into the community and being able to provide information is critical. when misinformation and disinformation can be so prevalent. How was this update significant?
We saw, I think, as you point out, through the pandemic, how important it was for accurate information. And we know that people aren't necessarily showing up at the health unit office to ask their questions, nor are they necessarily calling the health unit to ask their questions. So we know that we needed information to be available, accessible, digestible on the health unit, really in a way of the type of information that people want to learn about and want to see. Our previous website was in development, and then the pandemic hit, and so we weren't fully able to fill out the website. So we had identified also that there was some gaps that we needed to fill, and so this was really a perfect timing to relaunch some of that and start to meet the information needs of the community.
Are more people using the website now that it's been updated?
Don't have a number to compare to from before the pandemic, because I think that's also key. The pandemic skews all of our trends in terms of being able to compare. I hope so. I think that it's a beautiful website, and there's lots of information and links on there. And if there's information that's missing, we would love to hear from folks about what they would like to see, and if there's the stuff that they that we don't have on there.
How much did it cost to do that?
So what a new website, I think it depends on whether or not you contract out or whether you do it in-house. I think we worked with a third party to develop it, and they've developed the websites for a number of different health units. You might actually notice a common theme or layout across many health unit websites. If I recall, I would have to go back and look at the invoices, Robert, to get you the exact number. But it did not, I think it was an important expense that we thought was well worthwhile, certainly at the time, with the returns that we get.
Let's keep talking about money for a moment. You are funded for nearly $24 million. And in the past, we have talked about funding levels from the provincial government. Was the level of funding sufficient to provide the services you feel are mandated, but also those that are necessary to serve the community?
Funding for local public health agencies or health units is less than 2% of the overall provincial health budget. So it's a very small component. Those of us that work in public health emphasize the return on investment you get from funding public health. The challenge with public health is the scope and the mandate can be almost endless. So when somebody asks me, is there sufficient funding? I will say there's never sufficient funding, because our scope, if you think about disease prevention, health promotion, really and tailored to the needs of the community, really are endless. We did not receive any funding specifically for pandemic catch-up. So by fully implementing the Immunization of School Pupils Act this year, we had to reallocate some resources within the health unit to be able to do that fully. And we knew that was going to be more work. So when I think, were we adequately funded, we were able to do most of our mandated programs, but there were some areas that we had to reallocate from. So community members might notice that we had less programming related to healthy eating or physical activity promotion, because each year we're doing an assessment of where is the most urgent need.
When we look at what took place in 2023, how would a merger have changed things? What would have been improved, do you think, if you had been merged with Peterborough?
That's an excellent question. I don't believe the numbers themselves, for some of the numbers you see in the report, would necessarily have changed. So, for example, The number of food premises that we have to inspect is going to be the same number across both health units. So that is a requirement that we have that we'll continue to do. Might have changed in we have an increased pool, for example, of nurses to be able to support the immunization program. So instead of having to take nurses from a small pool and reallocate to programs, we take them from a larger pool and reallocate to for example, the school-based immunization program. When we take them from a larger pool, we're less likely to have to decrease the services than in other areas to be able to do that. So I think that's one of the benefits that we've identified in having a larger organization to ensure that we have redundancy in our positions. So we're not having to stop programs if somebody is on holiday or vacation. And we'll have a greater pool if there is an emergency to be able to draw from that will enable us to continue our other routine services at the same time.
What is going on now that we'll see in next year's report?
Would love to say that we will have solved all of the community's health challenges in next year's report. I think there will always be the routine, what we call bread and butter public health activities that are our core mandate. So whether it be environmental health, inspection related, health hazard response, infectious diseases, outbreak management, early childhood development. These are things that will continue and that we'll continue to have a robust support for. And then we like to highlight some of the unique additional things that have happened. So we didn't focus as much on this report on, for example, the drug poisoning crisis, but we know that that is a significant public health issue facing all of our communities. We've continued to work with the Haliburton Kawartha Lakes Northumberland drug strategy to try to bring everyone to the table to address this common problem, this common concern that people are dying from drug poisonings and from overdoses. There's a spectrum of ways that we can approach it, and we might not all agree on what the solution is, but the only way to start to make a dent in it is by working together. So I think that's one area that we didn't highlight in our annual report that I would anticipate will be highlighted in our 2024 report.
Dr. Natalie Bocking, thank you so much for talking to me today.
You're very welcome.
That was Dr. Natalie Bocking, Chief Medical Officer for the Haliburton Kawartha Pine Ridge District Health Unit. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.